It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. A new investigation from the Washington Post finds that electric vehicle companies have extensive connections to companies in China accused of forced labor and other abuses. Several EV manufacturers, including Tesla, Ford, and Volkswagen, have suppliers with connections to Chinese Xinjiang province. Forced labor is so common in that province that the U.S. enacted a federal ban on products made there because it's virtually impossible to tease out which products from the region use forced labor. The U.S. has accused Beijing of committing genocide in the region against Uyghur Muslims, an ethnic minority with a large population in Xinjiang. Our next guest led that investigation for The Washington Post. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think electric car makers can or should do things differently? Should companies be held responsible for the things that happen in their supply chains? Should the U.S. government do more to crack down? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Evan Halper is a business reporter for The Washington Post covering the energy transition. Evan, welcome to Central Time.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Before we dig into Xinjiang province, I want to talk about why we're talking about this industry and talking about it now. A lot of industries over the years have had troubled supply chains. You quote somebody, a lawyer and supply chain management expert called Duncan Jepson. I want to quote this. We know from every other industry that there is that if we don't fix this now, in the early days of this transition, it'll be a massive mistake. Can you talk about what's at stake here in this growing industry?
Yeah, I mean, the auto industry right now is at a real inflection point. I mean, we're moving from the internal combustion engine, obviously, to electric vehicles. It's a big major industrial transition, one of the biggest, probably in history. And it involves many thousands of companies, millions of people, and, you know, a lot of investment. And right now, these supply chains are heavily rooted in China, and probably will be for some time. But a lot of those suppliers are now doing business in Xinjiang. Xinjiang is a place where there's so much forced labor going on, or so much has been documented, that the United States passed this Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, which basically says any product that comes out of Xinjiang is presumed to be made with forced labor unless the seller of it can prove otherwise. And proving otherwise is nearly impossible because the Chinese government has these anti-sanctions laws that makes it impossible for investigators, whether they're corporate investigators, or they're human rights investigators, to get in and find out what is really happening there. And so, we're at this place where it's illegal to bring these parts in, but a lot of companies are in a position where it's hard to find suppliers for some parts that are not connected to this area.
Evan, can you paint us a picture of this forced labor in China, in Xinjiang province, what it looks like as part of this wider relocation, re-education effort? There's a lot tied up here. What does it mean for the people at the center of this story?
So it's largely targeted at Muslim ethnic minorities, particularly the Uyghur minority. And, in China, they'll call them anti-terrorism laws, and they'll say, this is about stopping terrorism and giving people jobs and, creating, eliminating poverty and creating employment. But in the course of the way that they've implemented these, so-called poverty alleviation and surplus labor programs, there have been hundreds, actually literally millions of people moved from their homes. There have been documented cases of just hundreds of thousands of people put in internment camps at the peak of the repression, which would have been right before the pandemic. Since then, the Chinese government has said, well, a lot of our objectives have been met in stopping the extremism, and we're going to close a lot of these detention centers. And so some of the internment camps have emptied out, but at the same time, this issue of surplus labor and moving people You know, there's quotas and involve moving like literally millions of people from rural villages to these factory towns. And it's often coerced. You know, the investigators say that if, you know, you refuse the assignment, you could wind up being sent to prison. You're expected to comply with these orders when, you know, there's a lot of documented cases when you get to your assigned town, you go through this kind of indoctrination training. You know, it can be months long where you need to learn, you know, the Chinese language. You know, there's military training. You know, there can be restrictions on whether you're allowed to see a Quran and what religion you can practice. And so it's and there's a high level of surveillance going on. And so it's a very kind of repressive environment to be in. The United Nations has recently, you know, a UN committee as recently as March said they looked at the vocational centers there, and they often operate more like prisons, you know, places where people are deprived of liberty. And in 2022, the UN went to did the Human Rights Office did a big report on Xinjiang, and said that there was evidence of crimes against humanity taking place there. The U.S., of course, says that what's happening there is a genocide.
Talking to Evan Halper from the Washington Post about his investigation into the supply chain in electric vehicles. So much of that chain moving through this Xinjiang province in China. Here in the U.S., we're not supposed to get products from that province because of the forced labor situation. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. Evan, the heart of your reporting on this is the idea that, you know, some of the automakers are saying, we're trying not to get products made with forced labor. We're avoiding companies directly named as providers. It's really hard to figure this out. You worked with a couple watchdog groups who found it not that hard to find evidence that, in fact, American automakers were getting products from this province and probably from forced labor. What did you find?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's really what drove our story here, was the idea that some of these small NGOs, which are really just kind of a few people with some laptops, can turn up evidence to show that, okay, you know, this component was made with materials that seem very clearly linked to Xinjiang and, you know, made their way into a Tesla or made their way into a Ford. You know, at the same time, these companies are saying, we have these, you know, strict policies. We do not allow any forced labor. We have no tolerance for it. You know, that we monitor our supply chains. And so we were trying to understand this disconnect. And when we looked at these supply chains and the way these companies are monitoring them, you know, what we found is if you look at like a supply chain for a lithium ion battery, it could have 13,000 companies in it. And there's different tiers, you know, these, you know, the tier one supplier supplies directly to the company, but then they have their own suppliers that get them, you know, the materials they need to make whatever that are selling to the company. And what we were finding is that the companies are, you know, they enforce these ethics codes on their tier one suppliers, and then they expect the tier one suppliers to enforce them down the supply chain. And so instead of the companies actually looking at all of the suppliers that are involved in their supply chains, which sounds complicated and the companies say they are, but the more we dug into this, the more we realized there's actually lots of technology out there and lots of methods you could use to find, you know, where your suppliers are coming from, what they're doing, who they're doing business with. But often the auto companies are not choosing to go that route. And instead, what they're doing is they're just sort of taking it on, taking the word of the tier one supplier that they're enforcing these things. And what the tier one supplier is doing is they're just sending questionnaires to all the suppliers down the line. And as one of the investigators we talked to said, you know, the questionnaires, she called them hilarious. Like, they'll ask a, you know, supplier down the supply chain, are you using forced labor? Are you using child labor? You know, and of course they'll say no. So, you know, these findings had prompted the Senate Finance Committee to open its own investigation. And, you know, they're finding much the same, that these companies are just sort of imposing their ethics codes on these tier one suppliers, but not looking nearly hard enough down the supply chain.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Good afternoon, Rob. So I would say to everyone listening that we should consider going back to something. I think we'd be well served to go back to what we did in the 80s, where it was we buy American, we bring back American jobs, we'll improve an American economy, and then at the same time, we'll also be voting with our dollars that we do not accept this kind of treatment of people. We're not going to accept this kind of treatment down the line. And so that way it's controlled. And as Americans, we're smart enough to, we need to figure this out. We can do this. We so can.
Marcus, thanks a lot for the call. There are White House efforts to start moving that supply chain to other countries and some of it here in the United States. Evan, but reading your piece, it's clear for so much of this, not just battery production, but you know, cobalt processing, nickel processing, other components here, so much of it, China has a huge head start, a lot of it concentrated in this Xinjiang province.
Yeah, and I should say the efforts to onshore a lot of this production, they're not trivial. I mean, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act passed last year, and it's, you know, we're talking many billions of dollars that, you know, will be investing, the U.S. government will be investing, and taxpayers will be investing in, you know, trying to move these plants over to the United States. But the time it takes to ramp up production and the, you know, the scale of what needs to be done, even that major legislation that passed is kind of a drop in the bucket. I mean, to get a mine open in the U.S., it can take 5 to 10 years. A lot of these mining operations are already, you know, underway in China and in Xinjiang. You know, in particular, a lot of the processing is already happening there. You know, the facilities, the infrastructure is already set up. And, you know, something like 3/4 of the lithium ion batteries are being made in China right now. So, yes, some of that can be moved away from that country. And there's big efforts by the Biden administration in Congress, Republicans also, to move that production away from China. But the other thing that's going on is that these car makers, I mean, like we looked at Tesla in particular, but, you know, it also applies to Volkswagen. It also applies to other companies. They've staked their future on sales in China. China's way ahead of other countries in adoption of EVs right now. So if you want to sell EVs, it's, you know, it's a huge market just because China's a huge place. But they're also something like 40 to 50% of the cars they're selling right now are EVs. It's a much lower percentage in the US and much of Europe. And so these companies are concerned about rocking the boat. Tesla sells, you know, 40% of its vehicles in China, does a lot of production in China. And, you know, they'll ask a lot of questions publicly about things that potentially violate human rights in other parts of their supply chain, other parts of the world. But China is very sensitive for them because they're also concerned about losing access to that market.
We're talking to Washington Post business reporter Evan Halper about his investigation of electric vehicle companies' connections to forced labor, particularly in the Xinjiang region of China. You can join in at 800-642-1234. As electric vehicles become more and more widespread, what do you want to see companies do about ethical issues in the industry, including the use of forced labor in China? Do you want or expect electric car companies to source as ethically as possible? Join in with your thoughts, your questions for our guest about his investigation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with Washington Post business reporter Evan Halper about his reporting on electric car manufacturers' connections to forced labor in a region of China where the U.S. has accused the country of conducting a genocide against Uyghur Muslims. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about this reporting, your reactions, 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Ernest is with us in Hayward. Ernest, hello.
Hello. Slavery is definitely bad, but I wonder if that isn't being thrown out partially to conceal the fact that American car companies don't want to or cannot compete with China with electric vehicles. There is a way to make American car companies more competitive, and it's known as the free market. Why tax profits when you can tax carbon and other natural resource inputs? Let's go with our strength, which is a free market, but don't hamper the free market by taxing economic effort.
Ernest, thanks a lot for the call. Evan, can the U.S. Automakers compete, and battery manufacturers for that matter, compete with China, I think is at the core of Ernest's question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, his point about the way the market works, it is fair to point out that the reason China has such a jump on this is because they have so heavily subsidized these industries. I mean, you know, we saw this with the solar industry also. They have spent, you know, many billions of dollars giving these industries a jump and trying to sort of corner the market. And in many ways, what's happening with the EV market is we already saw happen with the solar panel market, where we were comfortable for a while just buying these products from China, you know, letting their subsidies bring down the cost of some of these products. And but then, you know, things have changed, relations between the companies have chilled, and you know, there it became almost a national security threat that China has so much control of the solar market, you know, which is where the energy industry is going. And now with China having so much control of the EV market, and you know, they use a lot of subsidies to get there. And so that's sort of the thinking of policymakers in the US that you know, we needed to kick in some subsidies also to help American companies compete and not let China have full control you know, of EV production.
Thanks for that call. Getting back to Xinjiang province, Evan, and this U.S. Ruling that, hey, you can't bring products into America made with stuff from that province. Clearly, it seems like it's happening. Things from there are ending up over here in consumer products, including electric vehicles. What are we hearing from whoever in the U.S. government would enforce that?
So it would be the Customs and Border Patrol that would actually enforce that. And, you know, they have seized, I was just talking about the solar panel market, you know, I think 1,500 shipments last year of solar panels that largely on suspicion of forced labor. Whether they are going to do the same with these products, we will see. It's not easy work. I mean, you know, there's a lot of even though these NGOs, like I mentioned, you know, a few laptops and they were able to find these ties, you know, the Customs and Border Patrol has its hands full with a lot of, you know, we've got a lot of sanctions going on in this country right now. And there's also pressure from the corporations for them not to to aggressively enforce the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. But what we're also seeing is a lot of pressure from Congress on the other side saying, you know, we passed this act for a reason. Biden administration, you need to start enforcing it much more aggressively. We're seeing all kinds of violations happen. It's not that hard to find the violations. And, you know, there's pressure from the Hill being put on the Biden administration to actually enforce the law that was passed. Whether the resources are put there, we will see. A lot of experts I talked to said that these auto companies are in a tough spot and they may be facing a reckoning similar to what the solar industry faced in the last couple of years.
Evan, for both of those, the solar industry, electric vehicles, these are both things that are key to meeting commitments for preventing or turning around climate change here in the U.S. A lot of efforts to make that happen. But those solar panel confiscations you mentioned, they've slowed down some solar farms here in Wisconsin. I know there's maybe an unresolvable conflict between the effort to electrify and get alternative sources of energy and then the reality that as of right now, this year, a lot of those products only are coming from China.
Yeah, it's a huge tension point. I mean, I did cover the solar side of this pretty thoroughly also. And you know, and what you would hear was from you know the climate activists and from the solar companies that like you know every shipment that's seized is slowing down the transition, and every time you know the price of solar panels goes up because we can't import these panels from China, you know that means fewer people are going to put solar panels on their roofs, fewer utilities are going to install solar farms. It's going to take a hit, and it is a you know complicated sort of tension. I think, you know, what you'll hear from human rights activists is like, okay, there is a lot of tension here, but you've got to draw a red line somewhere where you're going to say, you know, we understand we have to, you know, make this energy transition happen, but we also have to draw a red line. And they're saying, you know, slave labor is a place where you just obviously can draw a red line. And how do you argue with that?
It seems like China is not going to change anytime soon in terms of labor laws, transparency around enforcement of those laws that do exist. Is there a thought of a timeline where we could be making a higher proportion of the key batteries and other products in countries that aren't China?
You know, there's so many variables to this. I mean, I think there is a lot of there's a lot of ground being broken on different kinds of plants in the US and in other countries. You're also seeing sort of neighbors of China that we have better relations with, seeing opportunity here. You know, Indonesia, Vietnam, places like that are really trying to get it in the game. There's questions about whether, you know, whether they're upholding the ethical standards that, you know, companies say that they abide by and will only buy from. But certainly they're not Xinjiang. The other variable is the technology's changing. And so there's questions of, you know, do we invest in all of this new infrastructure and recreate it in the United States, or do we invest in research and development to try to create batteries that don't use some of these things that we're so reliant on China for, and find new chemistries and constructions of these vehicles and the batteries that power them that would be easier to manufacture in the United States.
In just our last minute or so, Evan, what are you watching for in this story after this big investigation?
I think what we're watching for is how aggressively the administration enforces the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. Are they going to start seizing these shipments? We're seeing more and more evidence that the supply chains are infected by you know, suppliers in Xinjiang. And so will the administration clamp down, or is this just something they're going to look the other way on?
Evan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate your interest in our investigation.
That's Evan Halper, business reporter at The Washington Post, covering energy and the energy transition. He talked to us today about his investigation of electric car companies' connections to forced labor in a province in China. We'll get a link to that piece up at WPR.org/Central Time. Remember, you can visit WPR.org anytime for live streams of us here on the Ideas Network and our Classical Music Network, plus archives of conversations. If you want to share this last conversation with someone you know, you can do that online at WPR.org, or you can download the Wisconsin Public Radio app for live streaming, archives, and news as well. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network.